All right. So, I don't know what I was talking about. Ken, yeah. Ken walked in here one night and had a, we had a, you know, kind of a lovely, unscripted conversation that, because he's, you know, open-minded and been around the block a little bit, he could, you know, kind of get down and groove with some of this stuff. And it struck him, you know, it had an impact on him, which it can, of course. And last week, I think when I, you know, saw him, he told me even then, you know, a year ago, whatever, it still has its impact on him. And he's kind of been meaning to participate, you know, once again in one of these conversations, but hasn't yet. So I just, you know, of course, told him he's always welcome, and we'll keep an eye out for him. Yeah. So I took the liberty to email him after our conversation last week to share with him what we did on Thursday, since they were so kind to share with me what they did on Thursday. So I think a few of the other folks at the Star group may have seen the video.
Oh,
so
long. They're Night Sky, Star.
Yeah.
Seems
like it was just...
That's the name of the group, just the Star group, that's it?
No, but that's something else.
Star
Planes.
There's a page on the board over there.
The lovely woman that one of the facilitators mentioned that she'd had an awakening some years ago and was drawn to visit sacred sites around the world and was given, you know, psychic instruction and stuff. She mentioned the Karmapa, who's... the Karmapas are, they're, you know, Tibetan lineage holders. There's not just a Karmapa. There's a whole, you know, like the Dalai Lama, you know, there's a reincarnation stream of Karmapas, kind of like a faucet from lifetime to lifetime. Yeah. So.
Did you mention anything about the 10-year plan? Stand on that or no?
No, nothing about the 10-year plan. Particular. Yeah. So, any themes? Any ideas?
What's your take on moral realism versus moral relativism?
Well, define them first so that we can...
Well, the thought that there can be a specifically better way of human living.
Yeah.
Which is like, I know it's a ridiculous thing, you like have to create the concept of a human first. So I'm wondering, does that undermine the whole thing? It sort of feels like it does, but at the same time,
yeah.
You know, making up like a culture where we like, you know,
yeah.
Cut off everybody's ears seems like a ridiculous thing.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time,
uh-huh.
Saying that culture would be equal to ours.
Van Goghism.
Yeah, saying that culture would be equal to like, you know, modern Western civilization also seems ridiculous too.
It, doesn't it get a little strange?
Yeah.
I know. It just does. Once, I mean, you could say, you know, let's just say to be, you know, blatantly presumptuous about everything, right?
Yeah, once you, like after the fact.
Yeah, once you put your foot in the pool, or once your mind, whatever that is, touches, you know, an idea, once imagination is lit, then you have... a world, for better or worse, and you can, you know, participate in the imagination of that world or will participate in the imagination of that world.
Yeah, but I don't mean to interrupt you again, but that's where it gets me, because it seems like there's no way to not participate. It's going to happen, and not participating. So then it's like, all right, well,
yeah,
you know, and I just seem like I'm naturally going to do this and not start cutting my ears off and forcing other people to do that.
So right.
It's like, you know, it's, I mean, I guess it's sort of like looking for a purpose or...
Sure, yeah.
And then, you know, I had heard an interesting thought when I... Or one I hadn't heard before was that the best culture geared towards finding knowledge in search of that, of like, you know, whatever the best information would be, is the best culture. But it's like that assumes that there is something at the end to find. Now, it might be a good path to stay on in, like, you know, for the duration of it in the middle, but when you know there's no end, it also, you know, seems a bit ridiculous as well.
Well, let's say today, if there were one, is the fruition of everything that has come prior to today. Like, you know, today is the first day of the rest of your life, right? Junk food or not. Yeah. So we've given, or the culture has given, you know, the species has given the Buddha a fair trial, and Jesus as well, and Muhammad as well, and Bahá'u'lláh as well, and, you know, who's that guy that's been in jail for Charles Manson? We gave him a shot, right?
Oh, I was thinking that.
So everyone has had their shot.
That did happen.
You know, Mussolini had his shot, and Franco had his shot, Hitler had his shot, Trump is about to have his shot, and I put them in the same grouping somewhat deliberately. And what the fuck? Could we say that, could we say anything about whether, you know, religious ideology or political ideology or financial ideology, have they arrived? Have they delivered a culture that, if followed, you know, diligently, loosely, with some degree of sincerity, has brought the minions of that belief system to some kind of, you know, enviable fruition?
Yeah. What does that mean about progress, too? You know, is there ever any reason to stop?
Yeah. Not much. Yeah.
Or maybe, you know.
Right. Well, you can say this kind of, you know, curious and I would suggest very intimate conundrum is exactly that. If the mind touches anything at all, we can see that it's capable of imagining past, present, future implication, you know, moral dilemma on one coin versus another coin, whether it's worthwhile to articulate and help to construct a society that would lend itself to sustainability and call it spiritual wisdom, right? Or whatever you're into. I mean, maybe you're into something else, you know, like wearing a, you know, a coat made out of hamster skin. So then you might want to construct a society that did that, you know, just to be kind of silly about it. But when the whole matrix, can we say, of one's imaginative factors comes either mildly or sometimes painfully crashing down, and you're left to face a certain kind of vague disorientation, where if you don't touch any belief whatsoever, that can either, rattle your soul, and or it can also open, you know, portals to something that, right, is not representational. So this means that one can play with the opportunity, the possibility of fasting, not in this case, you know, caloric fasting, though that comes in handy too in the middle of our, you know, snack
orgy.
But But the fasting that we're playing around with is fasting from the notion of, well, there's a lot of notions that we, you know, are engaged in voluntarily or involuntarily. Time and self and space and morality and ethicality and spirituality and what to do about, what to do about, what to do about, what to do about. So if this invitation to play around with, explore what it might look like or feel like to fast from ideation, then who knows, there might be some interesting things to discover there.
How'd you categorize it originally? Moral realism versus what?
Relativism.
Relativism.
And the initial place I was hung up, which I'm not, I mean, like, I'm not like, you know, no longer hung up there, but it's not really a thing, was that, you know, we, well, this work brings you to like collect, or to question beliefs. It's not collect beliefs, to question beliefs you have collected. Mm-hmm. And then, so I'm like, okay, you know, I'm getting rid of ones. But then, you know, I came to, I guess, you know, a seemingly undeniable fact that, like, one belief might be more accurate than another.
Sure.
Testably so. So I'm thinking, like, okay, this one is better than that one, because it seems like you're just always going to have a belief
system. Sam Harris goes there.
Might as well have one that's accurate, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody said, like, oh, I know this guy, Jeff, and he, you know, always talks about basketball and, you know, never, you know, talks about spirituality. I was saying,
yeah, can't like, dunk worth shit.
You know, we're probably talking about a different person, you know, so it's like, but I forget, there was not, you know, there wasn't really any resolution to it. It just was sort of like, you know, why am I trying to like remove this worry about accuracy from myself? And then, so, you know.
Right. Well, accuracy, I mean, accuracy is nice because the most subtle seed of individuated consciousness becomes remarkably prideful faster than you can say boo. And so accuracy becomes another, you know, walking stick or accoutrement of the pride of self. And it just, right, the whole call it, you know, miraculous mirage of there being a world, people in a world, and conundrums that, of course, you know, conundrums in that world, suffering or otherwise, just... it pops into view with really no effort, no caloric intake at all, just wham. And the miracle of individuation, or let's say a core self or a core identity that, you know, finds itself being the perceiver of all that can be perceived with whatever degree of accuracy one may be perceiving or wish to perceive, also shows up, and they contribute to the anthropomorphization of a false, independent, individuated, continuous self that's usually associated with, you know, space-time body-mind, where the question of moral relativism or realism can arise and should arise, you'd think, like any other, you know, interesting philosophical or behavioral exploration will arise. Yeah, so it's really, you know, party on.
But in the end, it still always ends up breaking down for me, because it's like, oh, well, you know,
it has
living
to.
Based off accurate beliefs is more useful, but like, you know, to what end? Why are you, you know, even doing that to me?
I don't think the species got here, wherever here might be, by virtue of, you know, living with accuracy, right? Yeah, I mean, you just, you know, no way, no how.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to, you know, you're surfing in this lovely kind of zone where the improvisational nature of creation and behavior is... well, that wins. The improvisational nature of consciousness and experiencing as an ongoing live stream, that wins.
Well, I do have a question then. Is it possible to have identity and accuracy separated? You can be like in a accurate person without thinking that it's you specifically doing that with all this identity. Could you say like, oh, as soon as that comes in?
Of course, but would you still call it accuracy?
I'm not there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, you know, calling that accuracy, I mean, exactly where we are if there's a we and an are, is perfectly accurate.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Nobody can say what it is, but it's perfectly accurate.
Yeah. It's like saying, like, white is white. Like,
yeah.
Or yellow is yellow. Like, well, yeah,
yeah,
obviously.
Uh-huh. It's interesting when you really look at the texture of, you know, whatever we call experience, and you strip away white is white and blue is blue and, you know, anything at all. This is perfectly accurate, but nobody knows what it is or, you know, or nothing can actually be said about it with any accuracy, and yet it still remains perfectly accurate. Hi. More snacks. I don't know. Everyone must have got the memo, the snack memo.
Oh, really?
Look.
Yeah, wow. Ooh. Ooh.
So the fasting is a useful, you know, metaphor.
Like it's maybe to break the initial and then whatever happens.
Yeah, right. The fasting is a way of like, okay, I'm just gonna put this down. Not denigrate. Just, you know, leave it alone. Lay it, right, leave it, just put it down. So what we call the mind, though it may appear to be continually besieged by the next seduction, right? Needn't be. And that's a really kind of thrilling and curious place to hang out, even if just for a moment or two, occasionally, to actually have what I would call a direct encounter with a absolutely fasting mind. You know, right? This is still whatever it is or isn't. You don't know what it is or isn't. You don't care or need to know what it is or isn't. The question of morality and or accuracy is no longer, you know, really on your shoulders. And there's a certain...
No, I'm good. Thanks, Jamie.
A certain...
Thank you very much. I'm okay.
There's a certain, call it refresh. Now the challenge, you know, for someone that's inspired to have this kind of a conversation is you have to, of course, have had a taste of that refresh. Children's toys. I think they're all coming alive. We're about to die. We're going to be slaughtered by children's toys inhabited by demons. Okay, good. I was getting nervous there for a moment. Yeah, so there's a certain craving that gets lit inside of you once you've had a few moments of conscious encounter with a fasting mind. Because you still, let's say, exist. You haven't gone into a coma. And yet, there's no content. And you're like, I don't know what that is. How is it that I'm still, let's say, me? Conscious is whatever conscious means. There's no content at all. In my mind, in my soul, in my emotion, I don't have any regrets. I don't have any addictions for a few minutes, and that's really nice. Doesn't last.
Added that for a few
minutes. Yeah, really, just for a few minutes, right? I mean, you're so wiped clean, and this is irrefutable, and this has visited you, because if it hasn't visited you, you wouldn't be here. And if you were here by some mistake and this thing hasn't visited you, you're not going to stay here for long. You might be polite the first time you come, but you will never see you again. So something has already occurred to you, in you, and as you, which we could speak of with no reserve as absolute liberation. It didn't necessarily last. It didn't necessarily become, you know, angels singing for the remainder of your life. But you have no doubt that you've been party to being wiped clean, and you really don't know what that is, but it sure didn't suck, and it'd be nice if it might came back and visited again.
It was quiet there.
Yeah. So that, you could say, is the hallmark of someone who, you know, turns the volume up on a certain quality of, you know, seeking or a certain quality of contemplation. Now, that wiped clean is what you could say separates, though there needn't be any, you know, real separation, but just for fun, because, you know, we've been doing some cross-pollination with our friends, you know, next door. But that experience, I would say, of being wiped clean is what can separate you from, you know, continuing to participate in spiritual materialism, which is a lot of fun and fantastic, and you'll make great friends and maybe a soulmate, and don't hesitate, right? But then there's the unspeakable gift of the fasting mind or the fasting consciousness. And you discover in those encounters that you are way beyond happy. Even if it's just, you know, just a few moments, you discover, oh my God, I had no idea it was possible to be that happy without even being happy. And then that craving, you know, will start to show up, and it will inform you. It will draw you to, right, persons, places, and events, like a bee to a honey bear. I don't know. Yeah, it'll draw you in, and because you must find out what the truth of that miraculous vacuity actually is. You won't rest. Your soul won't rest. You must find out what the beauty of that sacred vacuity actually is. That it happens to be perfectly autonomous. That it happens to recognize that there is no possible authority other than yourself. That can be kind of thrilling, but also a little, you know, destabilizing, because we've been taught that, you know, Christ is an authority, or Muhammad is an authority, or Abraham is an authority, or the government's an authority, or, you know, getting channeled information from an ascended master, though, well, that's authoritative. You know, the Karmapas are authoritative, or the Dalai Lama is authoritative. You know, maybe Alan Watts is authoritative. You see? But when it comes to this perfect intimacy, which happens to be you, there is no authority. Nothing that has occurred on the scope and scale of human life, from whenever it may have begun to the so-called present day, were there one, matters to you at all. You are no longer a beggar. Nothing is above you, below you, other than you. And you're nothing at all. That's very refreshing. I mean, really, really refreshing. And yet, for some people, it could be a little bit, you know, confrontive. Because to rid yourself of all of the authority figures that you may have supplicated to get you this far could be a little unsettling. You know, I mean, if the Andaras have cleansed your soul and helped you with your addiction issues, and now they're giving you, you know, spiritual insights, you don't want to give up, you know, the green skull or the green stone or the, you know, the purba, right, or the artifact that has gotten you this far. You don't want to give it up because it's given you goodies. But the fasting mind, consciousness without another, it's not beholding to anything. Perfectly autonomous. There is no knowledge. There are no secrets. There is no healing. There's nothing to know or get. This is all, as in motherfucking everything, appearing completely apparitionally. So that could be a, you know, kind of a thrilling liberation to consider.
You know, I think that, you know, speaking of authority figures and taking oneself as an authority figure, especially, you know, in terms of like the
yes,
the self-help genre, you know, the whole
yeah,
improvement, you know, imagining and all that jazz. I mean, that's the biggest authority figure fake out.
The biggest, the biggest, or let's say most primal authority figure is the notion that you're individuatedly conscious.
And you can do something about it.
Yeah.
Or that you can do something and should do something with yourself.
Yeah, like we were talking about earlier, that whole strive to be better. You know, it's
well, even, yeah.
I mean, not that it doesn't. Wouldn't happen.
Keep peeling it back. That's the fun of this kind of, you know, process. You keep peeling it back. So like the strive to be better, I mean, it's kind of really fun to, let's say, see through the myth of that, you know, compulsion.
Yeah, give you something to do.
Yeah. And then peel it back, and then, you know, it's like, see what it feels like to, you know, rest or hang with or chill or loiter with the most fundamental weirdness you can find in your so-called present experience. Because that's way thinner than even the, you know, downstream urgency of trying to self-improve.
Mm.
Yeah. If you keep peeling away the symptoms that accompany the myth of individuated anthropomorphization, that's when you start to see that really the whole fucking thing is myth. It turtles all the way down. Now that can become a remarkable delight, an unspeakable, immeasurable delight. Because you're done. You're baked out.
You're free.
Yes. And what's odd about that freedom is that you no longer say, I'm free, nor would you say what it is that you're free from.
Yeah, you don't have to make it about that.
Yeah, it's done.
Yeah,
I mean, that free is really hard to speak about.
That's that happiness without being happy.
It's weird.
Yeah. That's tough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one person approached me and asked me what, you know, what the Night Sky Sangha was about and stuff like that. After she said she saw some of the video, but it put her to sleep. So she was already giving me some strong messages that she doesn't care about me or it, which is fine. She's certainly, you know, of course, welcome to feel that way. So I was getting those subtle messages of, you know, neither what you do nor you matter to me that much, but tell me what your group is about. And I'm like, you're giving me, you know, like cross messages here, right? So,
did you prove it right then or what?
So what'd you do?
I don't know. I said something to be polite.
What'd you make out of those lemons?
Yeah, I know.
Those lemons.
Yeah. I said, I mean, I don't know. You know, we have an intimate encounter with consciousness conversationally.
And then she was fast asleep by the end of the night.
She was snoring like a baby. It happened again. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it can be confusing if somebody's just going to tune into an audio cast, you know, and there's all kinds of banter going on and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And people are already into it, and they're sort of coming in new. I can understand being pretty disoriented.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if that's what she meant.
Yeah.
Way to stick up for her, though, Jamie.
I know.
I really appreciate that.
I know.
I'm glad you came to her. Yeah, I'm glad you came to her aid.
Yeah.
And then she said, oh, there's a lot of stuff on YouTube. You know, it was another dismissal. But, you know, that's fine. When you really unravel the way that we communicate with each other, right, and the messages that we're putting forth, right, explicitly and or subterraneously, I mean, you know, we're all transparent fools. That's not difficult to see. Because we all are all made out of absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
Now, seeing that we are all made out of absolute bullshit, you know, can give you not necessarily any kind of advantage. There's no advantage to have, but, you know, you let's say you have the, you know, the joy of not having to defend yourself, you know. Yeah.
Jamie's got your back, don't worry.
Yeah, Jamie.
Yeah, don't make fun of my friend Jeff. Well, especially if there's money or snacks to gather after everyone's body is, you know.
It's all my Quaker.
Yeah, it's a Quaker thing, yeah. What? We come to the aid of anyone that's being criticized. Yeah, well, I mean, this is call it another wave form of intimacy. But the intimacy now is really unraveling the, you know, very clever, if not beautiful, trickstery nature of consciousness itself. And that's an acquired taste.
What had bothered me up until about 5 minutes ago was, I mean, I could accept that everything that you're saying, and obviously it's just more conscious experience, but
yeah,
I always thought that, like, okay, you'll never be able to know if that is not referencing an actual objective world.
Mm.
Like, you might exist somewhere, and I always thought, like, okay, well, then that sort of means that you should be careful because it's, you know, a conscious world based off something else.
Yeah.
Until about, you know, like I said, 5 minutes ago, I was like, okay, but why worry about that world then?
Yeah.
If it's there.
Yeah.
Why I care.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, this is great because, I mean, this is so subtly iterative.
Yeah.
Really subtle. Yeah, I mean, you know, kind of thrillingly so. We usually play in realms of expression that are, you know, superficial. But as one's contemplative, you know, prowess starts to really consider, you know, the lusciousness of what experience is, you know, looking like and feeling like and how it's conjuring, then that loyalty that one has to the core imagination of myself starts to relax. Really, really relax, and then the being is unadorned. Your being, whatever that is, presence, whatever that is truly unadorned. So we're, in a sense, we're going fishing for another, call it encounter, with whatever it was that brought you to this kind of conversation in the first place, which was the effortless absence of yourself. Now, to become, you know, conscious, quote, articulate, quote, of the effortless absence of yourself is, well, it's kind of a beautiful day. Because now it's not, you know, some kind of wispy thing that may have occurred to you once for a few moments, never to be seen or heard from again. But that, no, it is actually, right, on the plate. It's on your dance card. And to therefore to play around with it, you know, to do a little rumba with the effortless absence of yourself is kind of neat. Because it's not so far away or foreign as, you know, we might be conditioned or told that it is. No, it's actually closer than close. Ah, and the dropping into, right, whatever this is, just irrefutability without metaphor. Irrefutability without metaphor. Irrefutability without representation. Oh my goodness. Oh, it's me again. I remember what it felt like to be unadorned. Without, you know, need. And that curious snake bite of being insufficient, that venom is gone. With it craving, with it you know, dare I say, healing with it, any claim that you could possibly make about yourself or anything. Did something happen before now? In your imagination, maybe. So here, this is the liberation. This is the unadorned gift, sacred gift of yourself. The resting in it, or the, you know, tinkering with it, is, you know, why the Buddha said life is short. Get to it. You know, he was, in that way, he was, in, you know, strongly encouraging. Hey, life is short. This is a precious human birth. Find out what this is. You know, don't, try not to fuck off so much. Everything is forgiven, of course, but try not to fuck off so much. Really feel this. It wasn't, his intentions were not punitive. You know, they were affectionate. And the reason, if there were a reason, that he was purported not have to, you know, started speaking the moment he had his Bodhi tree revelation, was for the good sense that nobody would understand this. Because it's so wiped clean, right, of any, the slightest seed of reference, that you how do you even begin to speak about it without telling a million lies? He's like, I'm not going to say anything. You know, he had his bout with Mara. You know, he dispelled Mara, who just went into the ether. The Buddha remained on his asan, you know, enlightened. He had an acorn thing on his head, of course. You know, probably pythons or cobras, you know, were surrounding him. Right? Stuff like that. He was so chill. He was like, I'm not going to say a word. You know, but of course the suffering, right? The suffering, which is, you know, the world, beckoned him. Please, please help. Like the sirens that took Ulysses, would have taken Ulysses and the whole crew to the rocks. The sirens came beckoning the Buddha. He was like, okay, for your sake, I'll speak. And look what happened. Just a fuckload of confusion. He was right. His instincts were absolutely correct. It was a fuckload of confusion got lit. Still to this day.
More fuckload of confusion now.
And it could be even fuckier now. Yeah, it's like 2,000 years to get really fucky. And it worked. And we don't, I mean, you know, no one in this room was there when the Buddha woke up, or maybe we were. I don't, you know, who knows? Yeah, we could have been.
It was really trippy when you really start kind of sinking into that, like, no, really, like, nothing, maybe nothing actually ever happened. And I know there's, like, so many layers to that, you know, and I've heard it a million times, not anything new, but, like,
yeah, yeah.
It's like I was trying to place just anything of, like, something that happened, and it was like, everything has to be an imagination. There's absolutely nothing happening now. I always seem to just be some kind of attention in a scene.
Yeah.
That's just attention in a scene.
That's right.
And it's always very similar in a weird way. It's like, what if nothing actually, that's all it ever is?
That's all it ever is.
Attention in a scene.
Yeah, that's right. It's just, one vignette after another. You happen to be the star of the show, and you're not even getting scale.
It's like death of a salesman all the time.
It's like death of a salesman all the time.
Yeah. Because it's like, if you hear something like the climate change thing, where you're like, oh, about 10 years. And they kind of put you in a weird arrest where you're like, well, I'm not going to do anything. Why would I learn anything or do anything? There's only, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If that's not
right.
It's just new and random. It's not even new. It's just like, so kind of.
At least you could learn how to play the fiddle. So when the end comes, you see, you're taking up the fiddle.
Electric violin. But yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, well, I don't know. Maybe I'll play a really epic
There you go.
Not likely.
I must have read your mind.
I'm trying to be a mediocre to get her tuned.
Yeah. I frightened a guy once in this meeting because I was being, involuntarily psychic. I was just free associating like all I know how to do. And I was free associating on stuff that was just hitting him like exactly where he was. And he was like, and I wasn't trying to pick on him or anything. I wasn't even trying. It was just, that weird kind of serendipity that every little weird meme that was showing up in my head was like, bing, bing, bing. He was like, I got to get out of here. That was pretty funny. He was an interesting guy.
That's a very different orientation.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Like just one scene after another, you mean? Or just a single scene, wherever you...
Yeah, I mean...
Wherever the scene is.
Yeah.
Well, Peter will often remark on this observation that... It's very tricky. You could say it's the staccato nature of experience appearing as indeterminate bites of association, right? You feel a certain way, a physical sensation, perhaps an emotional sensation, something appears in mind, you move the body, a story comes in, a story goes out, it lights up something else, and to us it appears as if you're enjoying or suffering from some kind of continuity that you even might suggest you are, willfully performing. But it doesn't take long to look at your own mind and go, ah, it's a fucking nut house. It's certainly not willful. And then to see even more deeply that each little, let's say, morsel of recognizable experience is absolutely autonomous. And you can't even find a perimeter of when it came into being or for how long it hung out and then it went out of being, because it's just ongoing.
Wouldn't you say it's autonomous, but it's only autonomous when you get outside of the present moment. When you are not within the present moment. As soon as you move just a millisecond into history, then all of a sudden it's all anecdotal and you're wasting.
See how quickly what we call ego gets lit.
Yeah.
It's miraculous. It just is. Yeah. It gets
lit.
I mean,
it's such a difference. That little bit of delay.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, this whole mental thing is going on.
Yes. And you can't really say, does the delay create the mental or does the mental create the delay? Because it's acausal.
Right. It's both ways. It's all ways.
It's acausal. So you can't really find anything that could possibly be prior to or causative of anything else.
Well, that's interesting. Because causality is only when you are blaming one for the other.
Well, like a brain or a neuron or a secularly existing consciousness that you can perceive accurately or morally.
States, of course.
And then, of course, there's different states.
There's Pennsylvania.
It's just like water and gas.
That's right. Yeah.
There's always different states.
I like
Yeah. Yeah. So where, this is kind of Dante's Inferno kind of thing. It's a spiraling down. Some people might say, well, it's spiraling down to a hell realm that I'd rather not, participate in. Others might say, like, yeah, it's a little warm, but, I can go a little further. So as you, as you spiral down, you're looking at the, the genesis of creation, the genesis of hallucination, like right here. You're spiraling down, back, or prior, or subtly, to actually... Holy fucking shit, Batman. The actual so-called, if there were one, genesis of the entirety of
apparitional consciousness. And now seeing it, not after the fact, when you've gone into some kind of anecdotal, you know, forensic discovery mode, but just like, it doesn't fucking quit. It doesn't quit. But now that intelligence that is curiously capable of, holy shit, this fucker won't let up, is not under the influence of anecdotal engagement. That's a very strange intelligence to discover in yourself and be confident about. This is a confidence game.
Can you elaborate on that? On that point?
Stop me. This is a confidence game. Mm. When I am attending to past, future, present mood, you know, corrective action, mm-hmm. regret, and whatever, I have no confidence. I'm without confidence. I'm a dupe for supplication, for Andaran crystals, for persons that have had, you know, waking up experiences and can talk in tongues. I'm a total dupe because I have no confidence.
Like Donald Trump running for president.
Like that. So I think that there's something other than me that's possibly having a better time than I am. And fuck, I don't want to have less than the best possible time that I could possibly have. What do you think? I'm an idiot? I don't want to have anything less than the best possible time that I can have. And if I think you or your guru or your ascended master or your meditation technique is having a better time than I am, well, fuck you, I want in.
I'm human, damn it.
That's right. I got places to go and people to see. So you could say the seductive nature of consciousness, the waveforms of consciousness, right, suggesting that you're an entity, that you exist, that something is happening to you, did happen to you, may still happen to you, it's a confidence breaker. That's why what we call human consciousness is insane, vague, disoriented, craving, you know, self-loathing. So this is a confidence game. By dismantling one's false sense of self, we are, which sounds paradoxical and counterintuitive, building confidence. But building confidence in what? Nothing at all. By becoming confident in nothing at all, which is the intimacy of this present, so-called present moment, which has no duration, then you're no longer a beggar. You're no longer a dupe. No one can possibly know anything more or better than you, nor could they be having a better time than you're having. No one could be. Nothing can be. There are no gods. There's that too. See, there's nothing other than you. Start there. And if you try to find you, well, you can't. Who could possibly tell you anything if you've discovered that you are unadorned bliss? Who could seduce you? No one. That's the confidence I'm referring to. Mm. Paradoxical. I mean, yeah, of course, words are fun.
Yeah. I'm gonna start substituting the word consciousness with confusion.
Good plan.
That's going to make my consciousness less confusing.
So. That's right.
Yeah.
It's easy. You really see, it's poignant.
It's right, man.
It's poignantly right. So.
Perfect A calls away to deal with things.
It's poignantly so as you, for fun, I mean, there has to be a thrill ride here. If it's despondency, it won't go that far. There has to be a love element. There has to be a really strong sense of affection.
Hmm.
But now the love is not sensual. It's not interpersonal. It's like, this is in love with itself, and you're welcome to get on board. that's a different kind of love than you know, love of other or love from other. It's like, oh my God, this is dripping with the thrill of its own self-discovery. That's love. And so then one is capable of finding with that kind of love, not despondency, because despondency won't take you that far. Love can really, you know, it can really launch you. So you approach your own consciousness through, let's call it an atmosphere of affection or an atmosphere of love, an atmosphere of really, you know, deep care, let's say. And that's how you begin to discover the miraculous nature of your own autonomy and freedom from all reference. What we call arising may persist, but it hasn't knocked on your door to ask you if you want to come out to play. Arising will appear to persist. This is the fasting mind. Attention is attentive, but not to any particular object. It has no plan. It's discovered itself as the most profound affection, objectless affection. You're absolutely released from having to make any claim. And you're no longer being strangled by the the codependent pain that someone could possibly be having more fun than you are. Alone and lonely no longer apply. Everything that appears in consciousness, regardless of how subtle or not, is a gesture. It's a gesture of affection. The vibration of color, of sound, of sensation, egomania, good junk food day. Self-loathing, whatever appears, you know, is actually just kind of an abundance of affection. Because there's no longer any association with anything that arises or appears as self, as defining of self, condemning of self, confining of self. Maybe that's saying too much. I don't know. Consciousness is remarkably codependent on otherness. One suffers, at a cogent level from the myth of otherness. and you naturally become, well, more a little more playful, perhaps, you know, adroit at discovering how consciousness is self-hoodwinking. And therefore the seriousness of this hoodwinking reflex becomes lighter, and you could say lighter and lighter. Anything that could be spoken of as energy I dare say it could be seen to be, you know, completely non-afflictive. Big energy, small energy, unruly energy, chaotic energy, sattvic energy, tamasic energy, rajasic energy, on and on and on and on. It's completely non-afflictive.
What about Jeb Bush, low energy?
Right. Low energy. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, all secular and spiritual, if those were the only two things, all activities, whether secular or spiritual, they are still just this. They are this, you know, beatitude of absolute autonomy. And though they may, you know, appear to be, let's say, clumsy and indulgent, you know, humans are kind of clumsy and indulgent, so their secular and their spiritual activities are likely also to be somewhat clumsy and indulgent. But even despite the superficiality of all endeavor, they're all still in celebration of this, you know, unadorned affection. And there's no, you know, there's no rhyme or reason for where, you know, call it the level of sensitivity or the level of interest or the level of compulsion or the level of passion that someone is at to, you know, get to the bottom of this shit, right? You just, ah! Okay.
Such an incessant search.
It's fun. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. It has an incessant. It is incessant.
It's fun.
Yeah. Consciousness is incessant. It's insatiable.
I have to concur.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The remarkable, call it constituent elements, and there are none, that we would say conspire to create a sense of individuated identity, are like, it's just so weird. What, you know, if you're really, you know, took out your big eraser and said, yeah, not that, that's bullshit, not that, that's a symptom, fuck that, no, that can't be it. You know, just erase all these, you know, erase all the superficialities that show up, you know. You're like, well, wait a second, what am I really? What is this really? What is this identity? What is it made of? You know, what's actually so-called occurring, or what can be found or discovered that I could actually hold accountable or responsible for a sense of myself, of consciousness, of individuation, of being at risk.
of, you know, the curious mythic vibration of body, mind, space, time.
I know what it is.
Oh, you do?
It's a certain je ne sais
quoi. It's certain je ne sais quoi. That's right. The French. I knew the French were responsible.
Yeah.
I knew it. It's Pepe Le Pew, the skunk. Monsieur Le Pew. Yeah, definitely. Now it makes perfect sense. A womanizing skunk is responsible for all of the suffering in the universe. Pepe Le Pew, get him!
With a scarf.
With a scarf.
Well, we should call it, it's not called a scarf.
Womanizing skunk.
Le scarf.
Le scarf.
No, French have an entirely different name.
Garotte.
Yeah.
Jean Klein wore those. He was cool. He knew what this was all about. He wore that garotte because he knew who was responsible for everyone suffering the way that they do. Probably met with Pepe privately on several occasions. Have you seen Monsieur Le Pew?
Yeah, the whole
Excess
Hollywood
package.
That's the secret bloodline. It just leads back to Pepe.
I did hear a lovely anecdotal story about Jean Klein recently that I'll share with you since he's dead and no one really cares. The person that told me the story was dining with Jean privately, you know, just having lunch. It wasn't necessarily a thing, you know. And a dog shows up from wherever. Jean gives the dog something to eat and then deliberately pets him on the head several times and then turns to his companion and said, "So he will remember."
He did that for his friend's benefit?
No, for the dog.
For the dogs, yeah. Right.
So I remember what?
Did he pat him on the head?
Is that the enlightenment touch?
Yeah.
The dog's like, "I'm good."
You know, next lifetime, direct path.
Get fed and
all of a sudden. The dog wasn't already a...
The dog could have been Lakshmi the cow.
The dog's like, "Nice try, dude."
I don't know. You can read...
Next, you got any more chicken?
You can read all kinds of things into it. As you, organically start to pierce the veil of conformist reality and you become, you know, just more, let's say, lucid or elastic within the, you know, the comfort and familiarity of your own consciousness, this, whatever this is or isn't, you know, starts to appear in a really strange, serendipitous nature. A mirthful, serendipitous nature. Because the heaviness, you know, the weight of continuity, of personality, of individuation is, you know, relaxed. So, the rising still occurs, of course. Experiencing still shows up in the way that experiencing does. But it's not passing through the aggressive nature of your personal filtration. The aggressive and asleep, somnambulistic nature of your personal filtration. So the novelty of present experience is always, you know, kind of an inside joke. And you don't have to make anything up about it specifically.
even with perfect non-specificity, all that's, you know, appearing as you and in you and to you is just kind of an inside joke. It's, you know, it's another gesture of, hello, yeah, I know you. And we're not, see, we're not aggressively and involuntarily processing the mystery of present experience through an organizing mind, right? An organizing structure, which puts everything in some kind of temporal or spatial file cabinet and then draws silly causative conclusions between one dreamscape or one vignette and another.
Very arbitrary.
Isn't it lovely? Yeah.
Arbitrary is like off the table at that point, because it's like, I mean, it's like if you were trying to compare like what's happening right now to like a dream that you had 2 days ago.
Yes.
Arbitrary is like, what? No, it just doesn't make any sense. Like there is no.
Yes.
There's just nothing.
Yeah.
Not arbitrary assumes that there's
not even a little bit.
There's this kind of sense or that kind of sense.
Yeah.
What you're saying.
Start.
There is no.
You start with arbitrary and then you'll forget how to spell it. Yeah. It's just so curious to, you know, drop through, in a sense, to drop through, you know, nested layers of what reality might be pretending to be. Yeah, even arbitrary is like too much order. It's fucked up.
It still kind of is like, no, yeah, like there's continuity and something happened, but the way I place it is arbitrary. Like,
yeah, there's just, you're not even here anymore.
Or you could say the exact opposite. You could say it's absolutely rock solid, but it's totally delusional.
Rock solid delusion. I'm down with that. Yeah.
Because it's not at all arbitrary if you have to defend it. When you're defending it, it's that's the way it is.
Well, yeah, I mean that's the sorrow of a mind that has found something.
Yes, the sorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Woe is me.
Yeah, that's the great lamentation of a mind that has found something. Yeah. I mean, it's total heresy, isn't it? To suggest that you might enjoy yourself by resting in absolute incredulity.
It is heresy.
It's complete heresy, because everyone expects you to pay your taxes at a minimum, you know, and wear, you know, sneakers without holes in them and, you know, smell socially acceptable. I know, check for everything. Yeah, my mind's so fucking
okay. I'm getting there.
Yeah, right. So you see, there's so much pressure placed upon us, you know, by whomever, you know, the society, the media, the expectations, the political banter, you know, the violation, you know, just the vague violation of the species against itself places so much pressure for, you know, conformists showing up that it becomes a heresy that if this were done nothing at all and reality was just winking at you all the time, you know, no one would even know what to do with that.
Rabble, 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 rabble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be free from the, you know, entitlement of any kind of expectation, any kind of deliverable, any kind of, you know, rights to, can we say, personal fulfillment. That's free. When even the, you know, the entitled insistence on personal fulfillment has left town, and it didn't even give you a reach around before it got on the bus.
What a bastard!
It just left you flat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally
get you. Yeah, and if you had any money in your bank account, it probably took it. There goes your dignity. Just down the toilet. suffering, if there is any, or if there is any, in the way that it occurs is remarkably simple, and yet, you know, it has such a strong odoriferous implication.
What's odoriferous mean?
Full of odor, you know.
Like when someone lifts the covers and farts.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's like if you fart, don't lift the covers.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant. What is it called? It's
Dutch oven.
Yeah.
Dutch oven. Perfect. Perfect.
Oh, really? There's a name for that?
Well, yeah, of course, yeah, man. That's a perfect analogy for me. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a brother, so I know these.
Well, yeah.
Really?
Huh. That one escaped you. What can I say?
I know.
Yeah. See, if you...
Huh? Yeah, I know.
Try one out.
Very persuasive.
She knows what it is. She just didn't know what it was called.
She doesn't. She calls it Jamie.
Come here.
Surprise!
No more scallion pancakes before going to bed.
Yeah, make sure you eat something good before you go.
Scallion pancakes.
What about the chocolate curry?
Yeah.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make sure there's no lit candle in your bedroom. Blankets will just.
Yeah.
It'll be a four-alarm blaze.
I think we took care of the definition of that.
We did. We really. Yeah, we got that. God, we're good.
Any questions?
Any questions, Dutch oven? Any questions?
Pretty clear.
You see how we tend to get entangled with irritabilities that show up, you know, in our own mind before anyone else is criticizing us, perhaps even before we've gotten out of bed that day. We can be assailed by regrets and plans and frustrations and, you know, accusation of all kinds. And we're like, I got to jump out of bed because this is just too fucking horrible. You know, I'm going to have a cup of coffee and go to work and I don't have to listen to this shit anymore. But that whole, you know, curious crescendo of imagining that, you know, that you've found something and that what it is that you found can be defining. Or, you know, psychiatrically afflictive. That's how the, you know, the gnarly nature of self-identity, you know, eats itself alive. Whereas a mind that has learned how to, A, appreciate and then investigate the nature of fasting, can enjoy from time to time. Who knows whether it's permanent? You know, that's a karmic question. That's too weird to answer. But can enjoy from time to time a complete relaxation or cessation from finding anything at all. Which also means a sense of self that might be looking for peace or looking for resolution or looking for some kind of saleability. That's gone. Yeah. So it's not a relief in the way that, you know, one typically seeks relief. So the game plan is to discover that intelligence and do shit, whatever that shit might be, that returns you to or reinforces an encounter with that intelligence. You nourish the presence and the consciousness of that intelligence. Nourish it because you love it and you're wise to love it because it loves you right back. Yeah. And this is not about being, you know, that Al Franken character from long ago Saturday Night Live. Stuart Smalley. It's not about being Stuart Smalley.
Yeah.
I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And gosh darn it, people like me. Yeah. He was doing affirmations.
In the mirror.
In the mirror, yeah. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's cool. You know, if you need to do affirmations, you know, to stay away from off-track betting, you know, all right, fine, that's fine. But we're talking about, you know, something else. By looking really, you know, affectionately and closely at the texture, the nature, you know, the beacon, the throbbing of consciousness itself, the expressive, like, I got you, I got you, I got you, you know. If you really look at it, you can see, oh, you become a consciousness whisperer. And the consciousness quiets down. You begin to discover what it feels like to not find an object. And with it, not find the so-called reinforcing subject.
And not get panicky when that happens.
And you don't get panicky. Or you pass through it. You know, if you're lucky, you do it enough, right?
Yeah.
Enough so-called practice, enough encounter,
yeah,
that you pass through.
Absolutely.
The panic.
Yeah, you've got to have that panic or you're probably not going to move on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Panic is part of the equation, I think. Mm-hmm. You pass through the panic.
Thanks, Donald Trump.
He's going to get his shot. It'll be funny. It'll be fun, like you said. Come on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No. The stupid white male, angry at a world that he doesn't understand, responds through egregious condemnation. As long as they just keep growing pot, you know, we can get through the day.
So far, it's a mess of videos.
Yeah.
I wonder if that should be like a new feedback loop in their climate change equation, you know, Trump.
Uh-huh.
There's a feedback loop.
Sure. James, you want to envelope? The envelope.
I can loiter.
Yeah, really. I can loiter, but I can't linger any longer. I want to get home and do that Dutch oven trick with my wife.
Yeah, I got to practice. I got to eat some chili. And I'll probably see you guys tomorrow.
He wants to show you something.
All right.
Yeah.
Sure.
Last call for almonds.
Yeah, don't forget those almonds.
Almonds?
You know, I'll have a few before you go. Are they just dry roasted almonds?
Yeah, salted, you know. Damn.
Wow.
No. Was there something wrong?
Had more than my handful. Oh, so thank you, David. I'm Ryan, by the way.
Ryan?
Yes.
How am I ever going to remember that?
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be tough. Yeah. I said his name was Dave. I'm not going to use it.
Ryan will work.
Take care.
All right, James. Snacking our way to enlightenment.
follow-up book to I Am Fat?
I Am Fat is my first book. Yeah.
I missed my book last week.
Your book's real good.
Yeah, my book is dope.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember some of the chapters. Complete Impermanence was one of them.
Nice.
My chapters were so cool.
Good book.
I should have wrote them down.
Well, you know, you
could. Yeah, it's on YouTube. Yeah.
Yes. You post on the YouTubes? That's awesome. I can go back and find my books on the YouTubes now.
This being recorded, broadcast, and recorded.
And will be posted.
Yeah, for the benefit of all men, fucking cool. Kind.
For the YouTubes.
Right. How many viewers did you clock in?
Oh, one year had like a lot, like 2,000 or something.
No. Oh,
no, maybe it was something else, but maybe that was Peter's one.
Yeah.
No, on YouTube, if you look at how people have viewed it, but maybe that's just you. I mean, does it count you doing it? You know,
I think so.
You have to watch like half of it.
Like if I watch if I keep watching it and breaking it up into chunks, does it count that as like I've watched it like 8 times or something? I don't know how that works.
I never watched any like.
Oh, you're too cool.
No, I just never.
There's nothing like oversaturation.
Yeah, when he leaves the house with Fauci, you probably just don't need to check it out on YouTube.
Yeah, you're like, thank God.
Good point.
Hopefully he's gone for at least a couple hours.
Then the other part is like, oh, no,
I'm going to be
back. I'm going to be
back. Wait, 4 hours now. Any burning desires? Closing remarks before we hold hands and do the serenity prayer?
Can we?
We can.
Great.
All right, then.
Keep coming back.
It works. Keep coming back. It works if you work it.